Yes, I do apologise. I do exist. We had a small crisis with my presentation, but hopefully we have the nice pictures that go with it. So I just wanted to say, first of all, I'm very, very glad to be here, and thank you very much for inviting me to be part of this conference. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the museum as well, because I think some of you may not be familiar with us, so I'm going to talk a little bit about its history and about our collections and about how we look after them. I'm hoping I can know how to move on the slides here. Oh, yes, that's good. Right. So the V&A Museum of Childhood is situated in Bethnal Green, East London, and we're some distance from our parent body, which is the Victoria and Albert Museum in South Kensington, West London. The museum is a large open-plan building with galleries on two levels. Entry is free to the museum, its exhibitions, and most events. Our main funding comes from the British government via our parent body, but we also raise money ourselves to assist with exhibitions, programmes, and events. The museum holds most of the V&A's childhood collections. The vast majority of these are public donations. They date from the 16th century to the present day, and they cover every aspect of childhood apart from children's literature. As well as some of the finest collections of dolls, dolls' houses, and board games, the museum has examples of most toys and games. In addition to this, it houses the National Collection of Children's Clothing, as well as childhood furniture and equipment. The museum holds in excess of 30,000 whole objects, about 11% of which is on display. The remainder is kept in store, on site, and is accessible by appointment. In general, we collect objects that are either made for children or by children, but we also have a small collection of representations of children in the form of paintings, drawings, and photographs. And we also have an archive and library that support the physical collection. Now, this presentation is going to focus on the toy and play elements of the collection, as well as the archival records associated with it. I'm going to highlight some issues of collections care, documentation, conservation, storage and display, as well as exploring the different ways that people access the collection. So first of all, a short history of the museum. The actual physical building was the original Victoria and Albert Museum. It was a temporary structure erected in South Kensington in 1857 to house the collections of the Great Exhibition of 1851. The interior ironwork structure was moved to East London, where the outside brickwork was added. Over the years, several different V&A collections were moved between the V&A at South Kensington and Bethnal Green. But a major shift towards our current existence occurred in the 1920s. In 1922, Arthur Sabin was appointed curator, and one of his major contributions was to involve children. He reassembled a V&A children's toy exhibition and began to build up a permanent collection of toys. He set up a schoolroom, appointed guide teachers, and placed all the paintings at children's eye level. The V&A became accustomed to having the childhood collections based in East London, and gradually most of the child-related material was transferred to Bethnal Green. And we officially became a Museum of Childhood in 1974 under the V&A director, Sir Roy Strong. Well, as I said, our overall collection is about 30,000 objects, but this gives you a little idea of the breakdown of the number of toy objects. Obviously, the rest of them are our costume and other childhood furniture and other equipment. These are very rough figures, but it just gives you an idea of the sorts of things we have and where our strengths are. Our doll collection is very, very big and large, and our puzzles, games, vehicles also form a huge part of our toy collection. Now, the objects in the collection are multimedia and mixed media. And so I'm just going to go through a few slides of the different types of object that we have. Different examples of ceramics, metals, wood, textiles, plastic, and paper. But this is obviously just a small sample of the types of object we have in the collections. So moving on to the way we look after our collections, the first thing I want to talk about is documentation. So we use V&A, the whole of the Victoria and Albert Museum's wide documentation database, which is a collections management system called Museum Index Plus. Now, this has been specially designed for the V&A and has recently been updated. Museum Index Plus is linked to a separate image database called VADAR. So each object or part of an object is recorded separately with a brief description and location. The catalogue record is then expanded with further information, including maker or manufacturer, provenance, date, dimensions, material, conservation coding, and any other information gathered at the time of acquisition. Each record is then linked to an acquisition procedure, which details how and from whom the museum acquired it. So on the screen here now, you see just a page from our documentation. The screen on the left is divided into three areas. You have a list at the bottom of whatever you've searched for. You have specific information on the object that you're looking at the top, together with an image of it. And the little screen on the right is the acquisition screen to do with a particular group of objects. Now, certain fields from our database are then used on the V&A's website on their search the collections pages, and so this information is then widely available. This new database system will eventually include an archive cataloguing module, which means that we will be able to link everything together, objects, images, and the catalogued archive. The database already has an organiser where objects can be grouped together for the planning of a new display or gallery, and there are other procedures in the system which enable objects to be linked together as elements of a particular exhibition. The database will further expand in the future so that other processes, such as records of conservation treatment and loans, can all be accessed together. So moving on to conservation. Right now, the Museum of Childhood actually doesn't have any conservators on its staff. We actually rely on the conservation departments of the main V&A to undertake any work. Now, in general, the museum undertakes to conserve rather than restore. Most conservation work that's done happens as part of a project. It could be an exhibition, for example, or a new gallery display. Otherwise, it's difficult to get the work done on individual objects. Now, as we've seen, museum objects are made of many different materials, and some objects are made of more than one material. I think, in fact, we'll look at this slide first, because this just gives some examples of objects that are either in need of conservation or undergoing some project work. That the little miniature sofa, obviously, that's going to be used in a display, actually, at the main V&A. And the doll, it's always part of a project of an investigation into a whole series of Welsh dolls. And the dolls were examined and also x-rayed. The little tricycle was used as part of an exhibition that we had on seating for children, and that was conserved. And I've just shown that little maze there because inside that maze is a little glob of mercury, which is something that obviously we've got to be very careful about in museum collections. So all the different sorts of materials. This means that we've got to involve all the different departments or conservation departments at the V&A, and this leads to different issues surrounding cost and resources. We have one of our curators who acts as a conservation liaison, and more recently, when we've embarked on a certain project, there's also been a conservation coordinator who's helped us at the main site, and this has actually improved things considerably. Just to go back to the previous slide, sometimes we do have the opportunity to have some conservation work done on a new acquisition. This was the case with this particular doll's house. This is Peggy Lyne's doll's house, which we recently bought at auction. I've got some work just here to show you on the slide. There's an interior view of the doll's house, and then you see a chimney being reattached using one of the original nails, but using a new piece of wood at the back. There was obviously some foliage outside the building which had come off and left some sort of green debris on the walls, which was cleaned off. And then you see a picture of a bit of the annex being re-glued together at the bottom. Now, one of the more serious conservation issues that the museum has is the deterioration of plastics. And I expect we'll be hearing a bit more about that later in the conference. So here are just some examples of some horrible things we have. Some of the early rubber, obviously, in plastic is very unstable and it leads to discoloration and stickiness. Some objects that are made from foam rubber and synthetic sponge have literally crumbled away. So moving on to our storage. The museum's collection is all stored on site in our basement, and that means our main issue is actually space. We're actually fortunate in having quite a good environmental conditions, and these are regularly monitored, which uses the V&A's ocean system, which keeps a record of all the temperature and humidity in our spaces. We have completed two major store projects over the last couple of years, so just got some pictures of those. The first was the refit of our doll store, and although this was mostly designed for larger objects such as dolls, prams and beds, as well as the dolls themselves, which are mostly all boxed up in nice new boxes, there's also provision for smaller and flatter objects in the shallow drawers. And for the second refit, which was our reserve store, we used the same mix of storage methods. So we've got roller racking, static shelves, and a mixture of deep and shallow drawers. And these have dramatically improved the storage of many of our objects. So this just gives you an idea of what our store looked like sort of before and after. I just want to talk a bit about our archive and what we're doing with that, because it's a particular project we have running at the moment, which is very important to us. It's called the British Toy Making Project. Now, the museum had been collecting supplementary material for many years. By the early 1990s, we had a room that was full of cupboards, filing cabinets and boxes, all containing a vast amount of disparate information. Now, included in this mass of information were groups of material associated with four major British toy manufacturers: Lines Brothers, Abbott Toys, Metoy and Palatoy. Now, the material in these separate archives varies, and it includes things like photographs, advertisements, financial information, books, trade catalogues, designs, manufacturing information sheets and personal letters, as well as objects themselves. This is just a small selection. Now, it was decided that these four archives should be placed at the centre of a bid for funding to improve the care of and access to the material that we had. So in 2009, we were awarded a Heritage Lottery grant for a three-year project, during which time we would employ an archivist, we would rehouse the archive, we'd catalogue, and where necessary, conserve the holdings and digitise a number, a minimum of 20% of the archive, and thus making it more accessible via the museum's website and other websites. So the first task was to strip out the store and refurbish it to the highest level possible in order to comply to archive standards and refit it with new racking. Now, the resulting strong room that we have, we've got a before and after pictures here, is the only store in our building which is actually environmentally controlled. So now, following the appointment of our archivist in September 2009, work began in earnest on sorting the archive. We acquired new packing materials and planned the project. So one of the first things was to arrange conservation. Now, an initial assessment had already been done, and now, with the help of a conservator from the V&A, we could start work. Because of the range of material, there were different things that needed to be done. So some were very straightforward. Objects such as books and catalogues, which were in good condition, simply needed to be boxed. Loose photographs and negatives from the Lines Brothers were rehoused. The Metoy archive proved a bit problematic, as it consisted of several volumes of press cuttings. So these had to be all removed and then restuck with better glue. So at the moment, the cataloguing of the four main archives is almost complete, and the digitisation of the material is running to schedule, with currently over 5,000 items photographed. And also, as part of this project, we have an ongoing programme of collecting oral histories from people who used to work for these toy companies. So as one of the main benefits of organising the archive is that we can then make connections between its contents and the actual objects in our collection. So here's just showing a photograph of the Lines Brothers factory making dolls' houses, and these are two of the dolls' houses that feature in that photograph, which are actually in our collection. So moving on to display. Now, displaying objects and presenting exhibitions is how museums offer physical access to their collections. Now, this can present problems in relation to the care of the objects. The Museum of Childhood has a problem with light in particular because of the open design of the museum. Now, the galleries are the shop window for collections, and the galleries have all been redesigned and redisplayed over the last 10 years. At the time of our designation as a Museum of Childhood, the galleries were very object-based, with areas designated to display toys, puppets, games, dolls, dolls' houses, learning toys, costume, furniture, and nursery. The initial idea for having designated childhood galleries began in the early 1990s, and the first examples were installed on our top floor in three sections. We had babies, early years, and breaking away. So at the start of the new millennium, we had a new director who was appointed specifically to transform the museum. Now, prior to this, the museum had very little in the way of interactivity, and this was changed with the introduction of play areas and toys to the galleries. Our director, she also set about fundraising, and she secured money for the first phase of our development plan. This happened in 2002, 2003, and it involved clearing our marble floor area, transforming the upper galleries, and fixing our roof. The childhood galleries were redisplayed in new sections, so Babies, Home, What Will I Be, and Good Times. And new cases were made for the dolls' houses and the other larger displays, as you can see in the picture here. The second phase of our development in 2005-2006 was even more ambitious than the first and necessitated the closure of the museum for over a year. In this time, we achieved three main things: a new entrance to the museum, incorporating a brand new gallery space and toilets, a revamped and extended learning centre, and a complete refurbishment and redisplay of the lower galleries. This display now consists of two gallery spaces, moving toys and creativity. We had already trialled moving toys, which proved very popular with our visitors, and it also fits very well with the national curriculum for our schools in England. The creativity gallery was a new departure and involved a different approach to displaying the collection. There are four sections in this gallery that cover imagination, inspiration, exploration, and finally making it happen. And the displays show a variety of objects, and we use both toys and costume in some instances. And all these objects highlight the steps of the creative process. So throughout the galleries, we have interactive spaces that vary from a specifically designed sensory area to an indoor sand pit, which is our most popular play space. All the interactives are linked to the nearby objects on display. So in moving toys, for instance, there are rocking horses, magnetic face fun, and optical toys to play with. In the childhood galleries, children can play at cooking and cleaning or do some building construction. There's a special play area for under threes and opportunities for dressing up. Now, in the moving toys gallery, we also have some computer consoles, which you can see at the back of the picture there on the left. And this is our only digital activity in the museum, but it actually shows some of the toys that are on display, and it shows them actually working. So visitors can discover what sort of mechanism is involved, they can watch an animation of this, and in some instances, view an X-ray of the toy. So moving on to exhibitions. So in addition to the permanent galleries, the museum has a program of temporary exhibitions and displays. Some of these are produced in-house, and a number of these tour nationally, while others we buy in from other museums and institutions. Our main target audience for temporary exhibitions is families. Now, our current exhibition is Magic Worlds, and this has benefited from some different display methods. In general, we can control light levels better in our temporary exhibition space because it is the only area that has internal walls. But also in Magic Worlds, we've used a lot of apertures which are individually lit and whose lighting can be adjusted to suit the materials that are on display. Now, of course, another element of access to the collections is when we tour our exhibitions or we lend objects to other museums. Now, we've been touring our own exhibitions since 2002, and recent successes have included Must Have Toys and Space Age, and the current exhibition, Magic Worlds, will actually tour to five venues in the United Kingdom. And we're also currently exploring the possibility of touring our dolls' houses internationally, and I believe it may come to Paris at some stage. Now, there has been increased interest in venues borrowing from our collection, including, of course, the Grand Palais, so you will see some of our objects on display there. The two objects on the right of this picture, the dolls and the home farm, are objects that we've lent to the Grand Palais. And the Princess Daisy, which is one of our favourite and objects, which on the left there is currently on display in the Gementis Museum in The Hague. So both exhibitions and loans provide the opportunity to have our objects conserved, and they also enable them to be physically seen by a wider audience, which of course raises the museum's profile and reputation. Well, then we come on to virtual access. So of course the digital age has caused a huge shift in emphasis in the dissemination of information about collections, from the printed written word to the internet world of websites, podcasts and social networking. The Museum of Childhood embraces all of these formats. We are in the process of redesigning our website, and we also have a very good following on both Facebook and Twitter. So then finally, just looking to the future. For the collection, we are planning to conduct a review of our collections over the next couple of years and to look closely at our collecting policy. More of our stores need improvement, and we also have a backlog of documentation to catch up on. It all sounds very boring, but that's what happens in museums. Now, there are objects in the collection that we may wish to dispose of, either because of their condition or because they don't fit with our collecting remit. But one of the big things is that we've just completed work on a guide to the collections, which will be published next year. So this is just the cover of our guide, which we're very much looking forward to having. So just briefly to sum up. Well, I should say, actually, more before I do that, more specifically for the future, we're hoping to embark on the third phase of our development. As well as giving us a new purpose-built temporary exhibition space, we're hoping this will create the opportunity to redisplay a large area of our galleries, so we'll get more objects on display with different levels of interpretation. And so, to sum up, the Museum of Childhood is part of one of the great British public museums, and as such, its two main functions are to care for the collections and make them accessible to the public. I do hope that this paper has gone some way to explain just how we do that. And I invite you to visit our museum, either physically or virtually, and enjoy the diversity and interpretation of our collection.